With Matthew 25. I have that in my notes too, because this is on the subject of when is the end time. When is the end time? When you see what's going on in the world, we are shocked for a week or two, and then we kind of forget what's going on, and then we have some major tragedies coming along, maybe not in the United States, they're in China, a long way away, and that doesn't affect us too much. But back in the time of the Apostle Paul, we see that he was writing about the end time, because people were wondering, especially if they were going through suffering, when is the end time going to come? And of course, all of us know that if pain strikes our family, we are even more desirous of God's kingdom coming. When things aren't going well at all, when it touches our flesh, then we deeply desire God's kingdom to come. But Paul wrote a letter to the Thessalonians, and we're going there first to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. He wrote a letter, and basically he said in that letter, I really don't have any need to write to you about the subject. It was interesting the way he put it. In other words, I realize that I've talked to you before, and you know about this subject, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, concerning the times and the seasons. He said, you have no need that I should write you, for you know perfectly that the day of the Lord comes as a thief in the night. It's exactly what was being said in Matthew 25 by Jesus Christ. You know perfectly well that it's going to come as a surprise to mankind. Now, it's interesting when Paul said that no doubt there was enough going on in the Roman Empire where Christians thought, certainly, Jesus Christ is going to come soon, because it really looks bad. How they looked at prophecies in Daniel, I'm not totally sure, but most of us always look at what's happening now, and we determine when Christ is going to come or how bad things are based on what's happening right now. I think when the Gatling gun came out, you know, the first machine gun, people said, that is the gun that is going to, unless Christ intervenes, destroy all mankind off the face of the earth. I think the longbow, or was it the longbow wasn't so bad. It was the other bow, crossbow. Is that it? No. Crossbow? Anyway, whatever bow it was. It was a powerful bow that could, you know, go 100 yards in 1.57 seconds or something like that. It was really swift. And then, of course, you have the repeating rifle that came out, and that was a step before the Gatling gun. But anyway, you have all of these things that are happening. Of course, the nuclear bombs that came out, and then you think, you know, the world could be destroyed. There's a PBS documentary on war. That's just the name of it. And it's really interesting to see the development of the atomic bomb, the two that first dropped on Hiroshima and then Nagasaki, and how mankind realized then it really was possible to destroy everyone off the face of the earth. Maybe not exactly at that time, but within just a very few short years, by the early 50s, when there were so many bombs available. So here we see that people were talking about the return of Jesus Christ. Now, they had already heard Christ say, Matthew 25, they had already heard about that. And for 30 years, because this was about 30 years later that Paul is writing the Thessalonians, they knew what Christ said, and they were thinking, yeah, thief in the night, it could be any time. People really take shots at us, because back in the 60s, we were saying, you know, the time seems close. It could be any time. But nobody takes shots at the Thessalonians, who thought, maybe it's near. All Christians probably have thought it could happen any time. Verse 3 then, when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them. How many periods of time has there been peace and safety throughout history? Short periods at that, definitely short periods, but there would be periods where it seemed like there was a lull in fighting. Sudden destruction comes upon them as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. How fast does that happen? Well, if you're a woman, you know. If you've had kids, you know exactly how fast the labor pains come. They just come, and they just start, and people have their, women have their babies on the way to the hospital in the car. That's how fast it is. When it comes, it comes. And that's how he compared it. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, that this day should overtake you as a thief. You are the sons of light and the sons of day. We're not of the night nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober. The letter by our president, Mr. Franks, mentioned about watching. And of course, it comes right after the, and this was Luke 21 that he was quoting, it comes right after telling us that Jerusalem is going to be surrounded by armies and the times of the Gentiles are over. And then it says watch. In that context too is watch ourselves, be sober. Those who sleep, sleep at night. Those who get drunk, drunk at night. Let us who are of the day be sober, doing something about it, watching and be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love. And then he goes on, finishing up here, and about the comfort that we should have and how we should edify one another. Now, it's interesting that the Thessalonians took that to mean, boy, it is going to be close. And so now he writes a second letter, follows it up with a letter to the Thessalonians, and we'll pick it up in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. So he comes back to that, and he said, I really don't have any need to tell you about it. But then he realized, based on the reaction of the Thessalonians and what he heard from them, you know, I better write to them again, because they do need a little bit more instruction. And of course, God in his wisdom has given this information to us today so that we can be edified by it. So he said, don't be soon shaken in mind, because there are certain specifics that must transpire before the return of Jesus Christ. So don't be shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us. And so down through the ages, there would be spirits that would come along who would be filled with this end time thinking, you know, and their whole way of life is just on the end time. This would be a spirit of the return of Christ. And certainly we do look for the return of Christ, but we can't take advantage of people. It can't be a wrong spirit. The spirit always has to direct people to keep God's commandments. Or by word or by letter, as if from us, which is interesting too. So there can be letters coming out that seem to be from the Apostle Paul, for example, but are not. I think we even have gospels that have been written. The gospel of, was it Jude or Judas maybe? In the gospel of, some of the other apostles, where you don't see any written letter from them, and you have gospels coming out as if from them. And it's questionable if it's not here in the Word of God. It's highly questionable whether they even wrote it. But the question is, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come or was coming soon. And by the way, there were people who thought that the return of Christ had already taken place. And you see that Paul talked about that when he was talking to, I think it was Timothy. So let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first, and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition. So there are two things, basically two things, the falling away and the man of sin. And what we take from this is when the Apostle Paul is writing and, I guess, synthesizing everything down to its main points, it's just two. And that is the falling away and then the man of sin. Those two. He didn't go into all of the trumpets and the plagues of Revelation. He said, if you really want the sign to look for before the coming of Christ, you've got to have these two things. And it wasn't, we can destroy everyone off the face of the earth, although that has to be. But that would not be the sign of Christ's imminent return, because we've been able to destroy mankind. I say we. They, in this case, since the 50s. And so we know there's been a lot of problems, and even Christ in Matthew 24 said, you know, there's wars and there's false prophets that will come along, but those aren't the signs. We will have, you know, plagues, we will have disease, but those are not the signs. Now, Paul came down to just two things here. He boiled out the water, and what was left in the pan was these two. And then it goes on to say, and I'll read it quickly, we're going to come back to this, but he exalts himself, in verse 4, he sits as God, and then he says, don't you remember that when I was with you, I told you these things? Now that comes back to what he wrote them first and said, I have no need to write you, because he comes back here and says, don't you remember that I told you these things? And it is very important for us to remember specific points, brethren. I think Mr. Franks mentioned last night in a Accord that he had given about 2,000 sermons. That's a lot of sermons. And he wouldn't remember all of them. I wouldn't remember all of them. Sometimes I have a hard time remembering what I spoke last week. You don't. You remember it fully. No, you do too. But it's like the guy that was told by some antagonist, a non-Christian antagonist, the story goes that he was being belittled for going to church every week. And the guy said, well, how many of those sermons do you remember? And he says, well, not really too many. He said, well, so it's not helping you any, is it? And he said, well, your wife has been fixing you supper for 20 years. How many of those meals do you remember? And the guy said, well, actually, not too many. So they weren't helpful, they didn't feed you, and you weren't helped by them. And he got that point across. You know, we are fed week by week is what happens spiritually as well as physically. So we realize then that there are some things that we don't remember, verse 5. Don't you remember that I told you some of these things? There are certain things that we do remember. I remember cornbread and beans. I do remember that. I grew up on cornbread and beans. And my wife gets a really big hug and kiss when I come into the kitchen and I smell cornbread. It's nostalgic, I guess. I don't know what it is about it. But there's just certain things we want to remember, and we want to remember this. These two things. Now it goes on to say in verse 7, after he's talking about the restraint from the end times scenario, he says the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. So what will come out in the future was already working back in the 60s AD, 40s AD, and before. The mystery of lawlessness. Verse 8, a lawless one is coming. Verse 9, working of Satan, power, signs, and lying wonders. And then in verse 10, all unrighteous deception among those who perish because they did not receive the love of the truth, verse 10, that they might be saved. Strong delusions in verse 11. And then it talks about people who do not believe the truth, but they have pleasure in not obeying God's commandments. So we see all this in the beginning here of the end time and how Paul describes it, and takes quite a bit more time, wouldn't you say, than just saying, well, I don't have any need to tell you about this. So why is this so important when we look at this? Why is this so important? Well, Matthew 24, leading right into Matthew 25, Jesus Christ knows that it won't be too long before he's crucified, before he's gone. And he certainly wants his disciples to remember, and he's going to remind them through his Holy Spirit that he sends back, where they can put into words almost exactly what Jesus Christ said. The intent will be there, and all the disciples, actually the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke especially, which are called the Synoptic Gospels, say basically the same thing. In the mouth of two or three witnesses, basically let it be established. So Matthew 24 says the following. Let's pick it up in verse 8. Matthew 24 and verse 8. All these are the beginning of sorrows, then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you. Matthew 24, verse 8. And you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. That is, the name of the one who is Christ and the true doctrine that he teaches. Because again, it's a false doctrine that is going to be taught, a false gospel. Many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. There'll be many false prophets. I'm asking the question, why is this so important? Because deception is going to be really great. And that's something always to remember, because if we see great signs and wonders, and we realize that there is deception in it all, and some of you are old enough to remember the healing campaigns where on stage you would have the guy hitting the fellow on the forehead and say, "Be healed!" And the guy would fall back, and sometimes he'd hit the floor, especially if he's on his knees. Some of this may have been orchestrated, but some of it is just demonic power. It really is. And the guys who were there, either they had a tremendous adrenaline rush and they got up and they couldn't feel the pain or something, but there are demons involved, definitely. There's demon influence, there's demons that can take over people's bodies. I have seen it. I have experienced it many times. Not so much here in Missouri, but basically in Ohio. Cleveland was the worst city I'd ever seen. And you could see the wicked powers that be take over individuals who allowed it. You have to allow it. Never fear what an angel, a wicked angel, can do. Never fear that. You have to give yourself over to it completely. And James 4 is a major key, and that is we have to flee Satan the devil. That's what it says. We have to flee anything going on like that. So you will have that deception then at the end time, only in full power. Full power. Nothing is going to be withheld. Satan the devil pulls all stops, as the saying goes. So lawlessness will abound, verse 12. Lawlessness will abound. And we are in that type of an age. Now, we've been in that age for a long time. The love of many will grow cold. He who endures to the end shall be saved. The gospel will be preached. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, and that's a different subject, but it's an abominable something that takes place that causes the city of Jerusalem to be desolate. In other words, it'll be taken over. And that's all that means. Abomination of desolation, when you put it just in what Christ meant, desolation is the desolation of the city, where half the city is taken into captivity. It's going back to Zechariah chapter 14. Anyway, if you're in Judea, flee, and I won't go through all of that. Then the great tribulation is going to be coming. Verse 21. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved alive. We're talking about physical salvation here. Otherwise, the earth would blow up if Christ didn't return. False Christ, verse 24. False prophets. Great signs and wonders. So as to deceive, if possible, even the elect. Why is it so important? Because it's almost possible to be deceived. And then Jesus Christ said, "See, I told you. I told you beforehand." And for anyone who would come up to Jesus Christ and say, "Why didn't you tell us?" He would say, "I told you. I told you it was going to be really bad. I told you there was going to be great deception. I told you. And I told you that I was telling you." And 30 years later, my apostle Paul told the Thessalonian church. there's going to be great deception. And this is what you have to watch out for. So why so important to know these things? Because we could be deceived. We definitely could be. 2 Thessalonians 2 speaks to just the false prophet. Revelation 13, let's go there. And this is on my mind a little bit because you know what happened yesterday where we had an embassy that was opened in Cuba. I think some of you know that. And some of you may know that there was a very strong leader who negotiated, I guess you could say, the opening up of that embassy. It was the Pope. Pope was one of the main reasons we have now peace in that 90-mile stretch between Florida and Cuba. So Revelation 13, and by the way, this was done in quiet. This was not out, you know, in the news where everybody knew it just completely. Yeah, this is it. Some of us may not have known it because you pretty much have to be listening to the news or yesterday perhaps listening and hearing. Yeah, it was the Pope who was responsible and we thank him for being the one to cause this rift to be healed between Cuba and the United States. Revelation 13, and I'll just hit some of the highlights here. I'm not going to go through it in a lot of detail because I told my wife this was going to be a very short sermon. You know, she always gives me that look. Well, don't you have those 20 points you're going to go through? Oh, they won't take much time at all. Revelation 13. So here we have the beast that is rising up. This is the beast where you have that same spirit. I might just mention Revelation 16. You can read about the spirits of these three men, the unclean spirits that have been there forever. We're talking about Satan the devil, his demons, who are around, they don't die, and human beings die, but leaders then are chosen, perhaps by God, like Pharaoh. Then you have your Hitlers coming along, your Mussolinis coming along, but it's the same spirit that is there that is locked for a while. This is why we have the bottomless pit. We have a key to the bottomless pit. We have God's angels that take a key and open the key to the bottomless pit. And now you have that spirit released again whenever God desires to unrestrain. Remember the 2 Thessalonians? It's a restraining going on even back then. So when God chooses in his time, and I fully believe that there's a 6,000-year period, and right in the beginning of the 7,000-year period, there is going to be the return of Jesus Christ. 7,000. That's what I believe. Now, if it doesn't happen, I don't mind being corrected. I'm not going to say, if you say so, I'm going to say, you know, you're correct, God. Yeah, I was wrong. But it was a good wrong. It's not a bad wrong, and we're not leading anybody astray with that, because we don't really know when the start of the 7,000 years is anyway, do we? But anyway, you have the beast, and it's rising up out of the sea. And you notice the seven heads, the 10 horns. Verse 2, the dragon gives him authority. And then verse 4, they worship the dragon who gave authority to the beast. So at this end time, people who will follow this false prophet will think that they're following God. They will think that they are worshiping God and they are worshiping Satan the devil. They don't know it, but even right now, if they have, being a Hindu, if they have their celebration, they're worshiping Satan the devil. If they keep Christmas, they're worshiping Satan the devil. They just are. They don't know it, and God has given them complete, total deception. And so they will repent, but this is what's happening in this world today. Satan is the god of this world. Just no questions about it. So you have a period of time, it's a 3.5-year period that this is going to take place, verse 5, 42 months. And then verse 7, it was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. and authority was given him over every tribe and tongue and nation. And then you have verse 11, another beast coming up. So this is the beast that's being talked about in 2 Thessalonians 2. Another beast had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon, exercises all the authority of the first beast, all the authority of the first beast in his presence, causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. So they work in tandem, but they both have the same authority. It doesn't look like that there's subordination by this second beast to the first beast at all. It looks like they just work together and one promotes the other, as we see here. Verse 13, he performs great signs. And then, verse 15, he was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Some of that's in symbolic language that I can't explain specifically about granting power and causing him to speak, except that there is a delusion. It is a deceptive speech that's going on here. And then he causes all, both small and great, verse 16, to receive a mark on their right hand or their foreheads that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name, which is 666. And there are ideas on that, but someone sent me their phone number the other day, a brand new phone number, and it was 999, and I wrote back and I said, that's an upside down 666. You sure you want to keep that number? Move out of Topeka. They have a 666 area code, a zip code, excuse me. But anyway, you have two working here. So you have the beast and you have then the false prophet. Now it's interesting down through history what you have when it comes to the beast and the false prophet. I pulled out notes that I had. Oh, I took these notes and I remember typing them up in Cleveland, Ohio, and I still had them in the archive section of my computer. But it's on papal collaboration with the emperors throughout the past. And by the way, the emperors have been German. The Germans carried on the Roman system. Some have said, well, what about Napoleon? He was a Frenchman. And the answer is that Napoleon was Germanic by bloodline. He was a German Lombard. He was born in the northern part of Italy, and the Lombards were the Germans in northern Italy. So some think he was a Frenchman, but he had German bloodline. And also some think that Justinian was a Greek, but he was a barbarian from a peasant heritage, and Illyrian, A-I-L-L-Y-R-I-A-N, and that's a proper name for his family, indicating he was a German or a Teutonic. So some people say, well, no, they weren't all Germans. The Germans don't have a good reputation except my wife. She does, but I still say that if you're converted, it doesn't matter. The Germans will be converted. Remember, the main highway is going to be between Israel, Germany, and Egypt. There's going to be a highway between the three, symbolically meaning peace in the world tomorrow. Okay, so what you have then is the Germans who dominated we know that the prophecy was that there would be four main empires, but the Germans have been the ones throughout history that have been tied in with the Catholic Church. You have Justinian, you have Charlemagne, who was a German Frank, you have Otto the Great, he was a Saxon German, the Habsburgs were all Germans, Hitler was an Austrian of German stock. And in Isaiah 10, we see at the end time that it's going to be the Assyrians that attack, or the Germans are going to come down and overthrow Jerusalem. But there's been papal collaboration for centuries. You take Napoleon, and he was not a Catholic himself, but he stated, and this is interesting, it's a serious error to break with the papacy, is what Napoleon said. He was not going to just, you know, ignore them. He was going to have a close tie-in with the Catholics. Justinian, you have what was called a pragmatic sanction that increased the Pope's power. The Pope's name at that time was Vigilius. You have Charlemagne in 808 AD. Pope Leo III coronated him, and you see the pictures of the coronation of some of these emperors by the Pope throughout history. Otto the Great, John the 12th crowned him, and he was the Pope, a Holy Roman Emperor. And later he was deposed, so you have the spirit, you know, well, I don't want the Pope to get too much power. So you see that they worked in tandem, and they both thought that they had total power. They weren't going to give in to each other. Wasn't it one of the emperors who stood on his bare feet outside the castle walls of the Pope, you know, crying out for forgiveness from the Pope? And some of us may remember that if we lived in 962 A.D., but it happened. It happened. You had, you know, the Pope actually disfellowshipping, excommunicating the emperor. Charles V of the Habsburgs, Pope Clement, crowned him Holy Roman Emperor. You had Mussolini, 1929, established the Lateran Treaty, which reconciled Italy with the Vatican because they had not been hand in glove. So that kind of tells you about the future and what's going to take place based on history and the spirits that have prevailed throughout history. Again, these are the same spirits that have been in the emperors and in the popes, and they have not been right spirits, godly spirits. If we go back to 2 Thessalonians, we can compare. Let's see here. Services started at 10 and supposed to end at 11:10, 11:15, 11:20, I think. 11:40 is what it is. Is that clock right back there? Nope. It's fast. Anyway, I read through 2 Thessalonians. If you compare it, and you can already see what I've done, and I've compared it to Revelation 13. You have 2 Thessalonians compared to Revelation 13. And if we just take a quick look at that, Revelation 13 and 2 Thessalonians, you have great signs for both, both Revelation 13 and 2 Thessalonians. You have the deception. Those two things are huge. Verse 14 of Revelation 13, you have deception. And also then in 2 Thessalonians, you have deception and strong delusion. Those are the two main comparisons that are parallel in both of those chapters. Signs and wonders and deception for both of them. Now, when you take a look at what's going on in today's world, National Geographic of August 2015, actually, Audrey gave me this magazine and I already marked it up. So, you have some things about this Pope and I'll just highlight them. The present Pope, and I'm not saying at all that this Pope is the guy, okay? I've seen this happen back in 1962. I actually heard a sermon where it's like, did you see the eyes of this Pope? His eyes did look bad. They really did. Was that 63 maybe? Somewhere in there where there was a new Pope. Was there a Pope John before that? But whatever the case, it was like, this guy certainly could be the one. That was 53 years ago. 53 years ago. One thing good, we've always been looking for, watching for this guy that's going to come along. And that's not bad. But you have here a fellow that basically wants to change the Vatican. He's not the first one. You had a Pope Pius X who came along out of poverty, and he wanted to make some basic changes in the Vatican. But basically, he was called very early on by a jarring noun, apostate. That was in Spanish, evidently. I guess it would be. In Argentina is where this newspaper headline came out. It said the cardinal is a traitor of his faith. And this was the present pope. It goes on with quite a few things here. He worked as a lab technician and briefly as a bouncer. How many knew that? At a club. He was a bouncer, so don't mess with him. He fell out of favor with his Jesuit superiors and then came back into favor. He's cleaned up the financial disarray already that was going on in the Vatican. He appointed a cardinal who was a previous rugby player to come in and take over. You know, somebody pretty tough. Going on here in this National Geographic, it says, supposedly he's totally spontaneous, but in fact, this one man who knows him well said, I discussed it with him before we left for the Holy Land. I told him, this is my dream to embrace beside the wall you and Omar. He said, goes on to say, such prudence is thoroughly in keeping with the Pope, known by his friends, who scoff at the idea that he is guileless. They scoff at the idea he is guileless. They describe him as a chess player, one whose every day is perfectly organized, in which each and every step has been thought out. He said, I don't think we've seen the real changes or the real resistance as it goes through here. He was the runner-up, by the way, from Pope Benedict, you know, the one who was in office for a short time and retired. Going on, it says, he is, the media would have it, reformer, a radical, a revolutionary. He is also none of these things. He's a hard guy to figure out, they say. Really tough to figure out. And then going on, it says he has a rock star personality. Everybody loves him. The Christians loves him. The Muslims kind of love him. The Protestants love him. Even the atheists love him. And his whole mindset is to bring all of them back together. He wants to carry the faith. The Catholic Church says that they're the only true church, but he doesn't believe that necessarily. And with Jesuits, they will compromise doctrine for the benefit of the greater cause. They will compromise doctrine for the benefit of the greater cause. Now, we have told us in Revelation 13, what time do services end here? We start at 11. No, I know we don't. But Revelation 13, coming back to this, basically says that he is going to be leaving his mark over the entire world. It says he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark. So he's going to have the atheists under his control. He's going to have the agnostics under his control. He's going to have evolutionists who are atheists under his control. Protestants, Hindus, Muslims, you name the ism, and he will have them under his control. He is going to be very ecumenical in more ways than we can think of. He is trying. His first endeavor was to bring the Orthodox together with the Catholic Church. And he wants to bring the Protestants in because he believes a Christian is a Christian. If you shed blood as a Protestant in the past, then you were a Christian. So he's trying to bring everybody together. Now, I'm not saying this is the guy. I would never say that. He's 78 years old, which isn't too old, by the way. But he's 78 years old. And he says he doesn't want to be Pope that long. Who knows? But whatever it is, you have a spirit here working at the end time, a spirit of ecumenism. Ecumenism, I guess it would be. So let's go on here. We have Discern Magazine. I think it would be really good for me to emphasize an article that came out by Neil Hogberg. His father was actually over the news department in Worldwide Church of God back in the 1950s and 1960s. Many of you remember him. But he should have picked up a lot from the womb or whenever. He's an excellent writer, and he's following along in his father's footsteps, writing about what's going on in world news. I went to mark up the main sections here to let you know the main sections are almost that entire page. And then there's about seven paragraphs that are very important over here. There's another nine paragraphs that are important over on this side of the page. And it's like, please read this article. It is really, really good. It is The Latest Discern, July-August 2015. And it's on page 25. A Pope of Surprises is the name of it. If you haven't read it yet, please do. I think it's one of the most important articles that have come along concerning religion and what's happening in the future, what type of spirit there will be in the future, better yet, than I've seen in a long time. Millions have been mesmerized by this pope, it goes on to say. But it starts out by saying, he has skillfully exploited the perception of his being detached from wealth, power, and pride, and has charmed much of the world with a broad smile, folksy manner, and attention-grabbing disregard for protocol. And that is so true, if you've watched him at all. The Bible warns that a different gospel with a different view of God's laws would counterfeit the biblical gospel of the literal kingdom of God. And then it goes on to talk about the lawless one in 2 Thessalonians 2. And we know how to discern the face of the sky. He quotes Matthew 16, but you can't discern the signs of the times. So what we have to be able to do is discern the signs of the times. We should be able to do that. That's why we have to know what's going on. As a stimulant to our being righteous, I think. That's probably, it's a prod is what it is. Most people who will be in the kingdom in the first resurrection will not have been around to see the desolation of Jerusalem. So this applies to us in the end time when lawlessness abounds, because we can get caught up in it. It is so easy to get caught up in that spirit. We have to be so careful. Goes on to say here, knowing the prophecies of a powerful, apparently charismatic end time religious figure who will arise and deceive, we would be foolish not to have a discerning eye on any potential development along this line. 2 Thessalonians 2 said what? There's two things. Falling away and then the man of sin. And he's going to be a very charismatic leader. Going on to this next page, he said, the key point to understanding Francis, observes a veteran Vatican journalist, and that's John Allen. And by the way, you can get that report, NPR, NCR, the National Catholic Report, comes out on a daily basis, and I do get that. I want to know what the enemy is doing. So I read up on that, and most of it, you don't even read it. It's just Catholic news. But there's some very telling articles in NCR. The key point to understanding this man is this. Beneath his humble, simple exterior lies the mind of a brilliant Jesuit politician. Francis is spontaneous, often unscripted. He has a track record of bending institutions to his will. Now again, I don't believe that this is the guy, but there's sure a spirit that goes along with it. Known for being tough, resourceful, and willing to plant the flag of their faith anywhere, Jesuits were the most ardent missionaries and foot soldiers of the Counter-Reformation against Protestantism. Jesuits were widely identified with the view that the moral code could in some way be suspended when Catholic interests were at risk. Homosexuals, who am I to judge? To suspend the judgment. Suspend it. Don't get rid of it, because people think, oh, he's changing. And the answer is, no, he just suspended the doctrinal view for a while. He just didn't go there. He didn't say he wasn't judging. He asked the question, who am I to judge? Right? Who am I to judge is different than I'm not judging. Do you think that he had thought about these answers beforehand? And the answer is, yeah, he thinks as a chess player, remember? A noted politician scientist Joseph Nye calculates the Vatican to be the world's most important soft power. That is, a superpower not through the coercion of military or economic might, but through the subtle ability to influence hearts and minds. An active Vatican policy that uses his popularity shows favorability ratings higher than any modern pope among Catholics. And then you can read, you have it to read. I'm not going to carry on here and read the rest of it, but I'll just read one more, and that is, months after the event in the Vatican, Shimon Peres returned to Rome to propose the launch of a United Nations of World Religions. United Nations of World Religions. Telling an Italian news magazine, for the first time in history, the Holy Father, Peres is a Jew, the Holy Father is a respected leader, valued as such by the diverse faiths and their exponents. He's truly the only one who can lead this project of a United Nations of World Religions. If not him, then someone like him is going to come along. What can we do to make sure that we are not deceived? Because we know Revelation 12, 17 says the following. Let's go ahead and turn there. Revelation chapter 12 and verse 17. The dragon was enraged with the woman and went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. This is Revelation 12 and verse 17. So when we read this happening, we see, there's some problems here. The dragon went after a church, of course, went after Jesus Christ, and there were three times definitely where Satan the devil went after Christ when he was born, and they fled to Egypt, that is, Mary and Joseph. Secondly, temptation in the wilderness. Thirdly, he talked about the bulls of Bashan, I think was what he said, are surrounding me, and when he was being crucified, you remember that. The bulls of Bashan, Satan was attacking him then and wanted him to sin. And it didn't happen. Well, he comes after us now. And all Christians since the time of Jesus Christ's crucifixion. He is coming after us. So how not to be deceived? I'll leave with 2 points. Number one, love the truth. Love the truth. Hebrews 3:13 says the following. Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 13. It's a warning, of course. Colossians is a book talking about faith and keeping the faith and enduring. Actually, chapter 10 talks about endurance, and then you have faith through chapter 11. But Hebrews 3 and verse 13. Exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. We can become hardened. Sin is deceitful. It looks good. Doesn't look so bad. Doesn't hurt that much. How could it hurt? I've actually had people tell me, well, didn't hurt so-and-so. I didn't think it would hurt me either. Well, the so-and-so that couldn't be hurt ended up in prison later on. Sometimes sin takes its time as far as the punishment phase. So we can be deceived by sin itself because it looks so good. And we have to be so careful not to be pulled into this world through media, personality. That'll pull us. And we have to be careful. Loving the truth. And I'll just go to Revelation 13 here because in the context of this beast and false prophet, Revelation 13 and 14, there are four verses here that I'll read. Revelation chapter 13, verses 8 through 10, all who dwell on the earth will worship him whose names have not been written in the book of life. That's all who are on the earth. Can we be right when everybody else is worshiping a false prophet? This is Revelation 13, 8. Or the beast himself? Can we be wrong? And the answer is no, we're right. We're right in not worshiping the personality or the two personalities that everybody else is following. whose names are not written in the book of life. So the ones that God will not be calling are going to be following. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. Verse 10, he who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. And here is the patience and the faith of the saints, which is what? 14:12. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are those who keep the commandments of God in the faith of Jesus Christ. Always keeping the commandments. So the counter to following the beast is keeping the commandments. It's just the opposite. The black is the beast and false prophet. The white is keeping the commandments. Here's the patience of the saints. In other words, be patient. You have to be patient. Just keep obeying God's commandments. Be patient. It's going to turn out all right, but you have to be patient in the meantime because it's going to look so good out there. The signs, the wonders, the personality, the charisma, the rock star. This guy is going to be cheered on by all mankind. And we have to set our feet on the Ten Commandments. Point number two, watch. Keep watching. There's two things at the end time that bring in, or we could say would be a precursor to the coming of Jesus Christ. Two things. One, a falling away. And that means falling away from the truth. And I won't go back to 2 Thessalonians, but this was emphasized by the Apostle Paul. And he said, remember when I was with you, I told you these things. And Christ said, see, I've told you beforehand. And I'm just repeating. I'm not telling you myself. I'm just reading it myself. And we know then that the Bible wants us to make sure and remember these things. Sometimes there's things to remember. Sometimes there's things that we don't remember so much. We don't memorize 8 or 9 points that someone gives in a sermon at times. But we do remember what to look for before Christ comes, and that is falling away, and we want to make sure we don't fall away. And secondly, the man of sin revealed. Christ is restraining the angel from going down and opening the bottomless key with that, or pit with that key. They're not out there in strength yet, but they will be. Those same powers that have risen in the past are going to arise again. Whether people believe it or not, I was telling someone a story before services today how back in Toronto when we were visiting there, and I had a visit with a prospective member who brought in their Protestant minister, and he was telling me, look, that Armstrong fellow, he's wrong. He said, Germany will never rise again. Germany will not rise again, and that's his weakest link. It'll be Russia. You watch. It's going to be Russia. And I sat there thinking, he's going to have to wait around and watch history develop. That's what he's going to have to do. If he doesn't believe the four main kingdoms that rise and fall, that Daniel spoke about, if he doesn't understand that, you don't see Russia in there at all. You just don't. Not that they weren't powerful. So we definitely don't want to be caught up with the worldly views. So a falling away from the truth. And number two, the man of sin revealed. The man of sin revealed. How do you know that he's a man of sin? He's a man of transgressing God's law. Just replace the word sin with transgression of God's law. He's a man who is transgressing and promoting the breaking of God's law. So let's remember what God tells us, remember what Jesus Christ told us, and remember what the Apostle Paul told us under the inspiration of Jesus Christ and God the Father. Let's make sure that we watch and keep the commandments so that we can be in God's kingdom, bottom line. That's our goal. So we can be in the kingdom of God.